You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program. Hope you had a good weekend, safe weekend. We're here for you all 3 hours. Hope you can stay a while. You can watch on youtube.com/the Dan Patrick Show. You can also listen on the 362 radio affiliates around the country. Boys are here, ready to go. We'll check in with the director of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary. Jason Hare will join us coming up a little bit here. Check in on the Dallas Cowboys. My Cowboys got a backup quarterback. And the great Will Ferrell will stop by the program as well. As we do every Monday, best and worst of the weekend, what you saw that you liked, you didn't like, you can play a role in the program. You can dial us up, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. Some great T-shirts during the coronavirus shutdown here. We have a quarantine this. We have some other ones there. Beer Here T-shirts that we're raising money for the stadium workers. So you can go to danpatrick.com. Check out all the gear that we have. Some great prices there. The big NFL news over the weekend was Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle, signing with the Cowboys. And it's interesting in its own right because Dalton is a former Pro Bowl quarterback. He's been an All-Pro four times, a Pro Bowl quarterback, I should say, four times, not an All-Pro. And he's looking to restart his career at the age of 32. I don't know if this says something about the Cowboys' current situation with Dak Prescott. They haven't signed him yet. Now, he's got $31 million coming his way, but he hasn't signed that yet. He wants a long-term deal for a lot more money than that, looking for probably $35 million a year over a 4 or 5 year deal. And maybe Jerry Jones wants to put a little pressure on Dak Prescott. Or maybe it has nothing to do with it. Maybe it's Andy Dalton at age 32. He's going back home to Dallas where he lives and currently lives. So he doesn't have to uproot and has a chance to kind of reset, you know, hit the reset button on his career and then figure out if he's got something after this 1 year in Dallas and then he can go someplace else. It is curious, though, if he had gone to New England, what would we be saying about New England? Oh, okay. All right. You got a guy who can win you some games, and it's going to be an upgrade over Jarrett Stidham. We would be looking at that as a positive for the Patriots for the regular season, that he would be able to compete for the starting job. If he had gone to Jacksonville, what would we have said? Ooh, Gardner Minshew got a little competition there. With Dallas, is it just a coincidence you're bringing in Andy Dalton? And he has a chance to make $7 million. If you look at the backup quarterbacks now in the NFL, there aren't many names there. And if you have a quarterback who plays every game, you're not spending a whole lot of money on your backup quarterback. Who is Seattle's backup quarterback? Any idea? Yeah, Paulie?
Seneca Wallace.
Nope.
No.
No, he's not. Does anybody know Seattle's backup quarterback? Seton O'Connor.
CA Mountaineer? Is Geno Smith there?
Geno Smith? Good poll. Yes, McLovin.
Is it Geno Smith? That was my answer. I'm actually not sure. Is it?
I don't think Geno Smith is the backup quarterback there.
It's somebody along those lines.
Well, you could Google it because I asked the question not knowing the answer. But I don't. Yeah, just letting you know. That's how. Yeah, I don't always ask a question I know the answer to, but I probably give that impression. I was actually asking the question, who is Seattle's backup quarterback here? You start to look at these guys. You know, Dak Prescott's backup last year was Cooper Rush, I believe.
Excuse me?
Yes. Cooper Rush. I think Easton Stick with the Chargers. Although I liked Easton Stick at North Dakota State. Yeah, McLovin.
Cooper Rush, they bring him out on color rush.
Yeah, they do. Have you found Seattle's backup quarterback?
No, I was too busy crafting that Fritzy-ass joke.
Yes, Todd.
Olt McCoy.
Colt McCoy?
That's my guess.
Olt McCoy, because he cut off his mic.
Colt McCoy.
Old McCoy. No. It's called Google. Google Seattle's backup quarterback here.
I have their second leading passer from last year.
We'll have it ready for the start of the show, though. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Josh Gordon was their second leading passer last year. He had one attempt.
Yes, McLovin.
Remember our certain host of ours used to say, Eddie, get the book. And they used to go to a book to look up all the stats from before.
Get the book.
Google suggests Geno Smith is Russell's backup.
Now, I thought they had somebody else in there. All right.
Anthony Gordon?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. In other words, Dallas has a high-profile backup quarterback, and I'm not supposed to read anything into this. You're like, okay, you bring in Dalton. You can't get Dak Prescott signed to a long-term deal. I looked at it as just a coincidence. I didn't think, boy, this is going to give Jerry leverage. I don't think Dak Prescott and his agent are going, oh, uh-oh, we got to worry here. Now, I still believe Dak should be looking at not a hometown discount, but being economically smart here, you know, fiscally responsible, that you're going to make at least, what, $5 to $10 million off the field by just being the Cowboys quarterback. That this is valuable real estate. We see what's happened with Troy Aikman. We see what's happened with Tony Romo. When you're a Cowboys quarterback, there's a whole lot of cachet that goes with it, and a whole lot of cash as well. But with Dak Prescott, I still think there's a deal that gets done with Jerry Jones. Jerry is trying to do everything possible to make sure that he wins at least one more Super Bowl. And if that means I've got a backup quarterback who is reliable, and if something happens to Dak, as it does with most quarterbacks, I have somebody who can come in, and I'm going to pay a little bit more for a high-end backup. And maybe it's just this 1 year. Look at everything that he's done. I mean, they went out and got CeeDee Lamb. They didn't need CeeDee Lamb. They needed other things. But Jerry wants to go out and be the Kansas City Chiefs of the NFC. We're going to go out and we're going to sling it. We got a track team here, and we're going to go. That's what he's trying to do. You got a backup quarterback here. Okay. Remember what happened with the Kansas City Chiefs during the year. Their season almost ended when Patrick Mahomes got injured. All of that talent, ready to win now. Maybe that's what Jerry is doing. Maybe. But I found it interesting that of all the places Andy Dalton was going to go, I didn't see Dallas because I thought at his age, at age 32, he still has something to prove. Wants to be able to compete for a starting role. Maybe New England wasn't a good fit. Maybe Jacksonville didn't want to bring in Andy Dalton to put pressure on Gardner Minshew. Maybe Jacksonville doesn't really want to win games this year. That's what I'm thinking. Hey, you guys want to bring in Dalton? They could probably help us win. Nah, we'll stay with what we have here. Because if you got somebody is tanking for Trevor Lawrence. Somebody is. If they were tanking for Tua, they're tanking for Trevor. You can believe that. Is it going to be Washington? Dwayne Haskins got one more year here to prove himself. Absolutely one more year. Carolina's going to have Teddy Bridgewater for this coming season. If things don't go well and you bring in Trevor Lawrence, if you're going to be Jacksonville, Gardner Minshew, one more year. That's all you get. Yeah, Paulie.
Confirmed last year, 2019, Geno Smith was on the roster, never threw a pass, but was the backup.
Okay.
Anthony Gordon's a new guy in Seattle.
This program is brought to you by the great folks at LegalZoom. No matter what happens, you want to make sure your loved ones are taken care of. That's why LegalZoom has made it easy to set up the right estate plan without leaving your home. Take care of your family today with the right estate plan at LegalZoom.com. All right, we'll get to phone calls here. Best and worst of the weekend. What we liked, what we didn't like, and we'll hear from Michael Jordan after last night with episodes 5 and 6. Some spicy stuff there, interesting stuff. In Russell Wilson's 8 years as the Seahawks starting quarterback, Seattle's quarterbacks other than Wilson have thrown a total of 47 passes and 2 touchdowns. So the last time a Seahawks quarterback other than Russell Wilson Jr. III threw a touchdown, Trayvon Boykin. Wasn't he TCU's Trayvon Boykin?
Nice.
So, if you have the guy who's healthy, you don't really worry about your backup quarterback. It's when you have a guy who's a little bit frail. I mean, that's why Philadelphia did what Philadelphia, you know, did during the draft. They went out and they got Jalen Hurts. Yes, McLovin.
But I don't understand. Dak's never gotten hurt. So, to me, this isn't about the back. This is about Dak because they don't need a backup. Dak never gets hurt.
You think that this is leverage for Jerry Jones?
I'm on the camp, and I don't know. But, yeah, I do think it might be sort of put a little bit of pressure because the only other backup plan was Cooper Rush if Dak Prescott didn't show up. So, I mean, I don't think it's like a hardcore leverage point, but I do think it might have factored into Jerry's thinking.
It's not a lot of money unless you need him to play, and then it becomes a little bit more money than you want to spend on a backup quarterback. But we've seen where these backup quarterbacks are invaluable. You know, obviously, with what happened with Nick Foles, when you have these quarterbacks, you know, Matt Castle stepping in for Tom Brady, we have these moments where you go, you got a quarterback who can, Teddy Bridgewater, he stepped in for Drew Brees, won five games, won in Seattle. You don't want to get to that moment, but if you do, you don't want your season to go away because you still look at the NFC East. The Giants are they're average. Redskins below average. The Eagles are probably right there with the Dallas Cowboys. You're not quite sure. I still think Dallas is a better team, but you want to take advantage of this. They didn't win their own division last year, which is amazing. They went 8-8 after outscoring the opposition by more than 100 points. That's happened three times in NFL history. A team did not have a winning record after outscoring the opposition by more than 100 points. Jerry wants to make sure, I got a new coach. We can't get together here. I can't be, you know, having these, you know, in-person meetings here. I need somebody who is going to be there who can help the situation. Andy Dalton strikes me as willing to be a backup quarterback. Jameis Winston knows, I got to be a backup quarterback. Marcus Mariota, I have to be a backup quarterback. This is going to be the same situation with Mitchell Trubisky. I'm going to have to be a backup quarterback somewhere. And then you see if you have that second career there, for some of these guys, maybe a first career, but maybe you get that second chance. Andy Dalton's doing a 1 year. This is a layover. And then maybe he gets a chance at age 33 to be a starter again. Maybe. You know, Joe Flacco got that opportunity with Denver. You're going to get these opportunities, but I think this isn't leverage. I don't think Dak Prescott is concerned that if I don't sign, he's going to sign for 1 year for at least $31 million. Dak's not walking away from $31 million. He's making $31 million while Andy's making a couple million the same year. I don't think this is where they go, you know, we've seen enough Andy Dalton. We don't need Dak Prescott anymore. Dak Prescott's their future, plain and simple. They'll sign him. It's been embarrassing that it's taken this long. They'll sign him to a long-term deal. He's going to make his $35 million a year. And then 2 years from now, we'll look back and go, oh, they got him for $35. That seems like a good price. At the moment, in the moment, seems like a lot of money. Jerry has spent all this money on everybody else. You gave Amari Cooper $100 million. He paid Zeke. He paid the offensive line. Pay the quarterback. Move on. Yeah, McLovin.
35 still seems like a lot, though. You're right. In 2 years, it will. But right
now, it does.
He was 8-8 last year.
I know. Is he a great quarterback? No. Is he the right quarterback for them? That's what they have to decide. And if he's not, that's when they should have done something in the draft. If you love Dak, great. Then pay him. If not, stop the charade here. Because you're paying everybody. Is Amari Cooper a high-end wide receiver? No. He's a good receiver, but a high-end, not in my opinion, but you paid him that way. Zeke Elliott, you paid him, and nobody's paying their running backs anymore, but you paid him. You paid the offensive line. Great. Do I think Dak benefits from an already made team that was there for Tony Romo? Absolutely. If you put him on Jacksonville, we're not talking about Dak Prescott. We just aren't. But with Dallas, he's the right quarterback for them. So you pay him. But Andy Dalton come to town, that to me doesn't change it. I think it's a win-win situation. You got a guy, something happens, he's there. Dak is still your starting quarterback. It's good for Andy Dalton to come home from the Dallas area. He gets to play for the Cowboys for 1 year. If he plays, he makes a lot of money. If he doesn't, okay, you got an insurance policy. That's all. Seems like a win-win to me. What's the poll question today, McLovin?
Well, we can go with the Dak situation. Quick question on Andy Dalton. If you were Andy Dalton, would you rather be the backup for the Cowboys or try and work your way as a starter for the Jags, who seem to be, as you mentioned, tanking for Trevor?
I would always want to start. But I don't know if Andy Dalton got an offer. Like,
right. No, we don't know at all.
Yeah, let's be fair to the situation here. Andy Dalton may not have had any opportunities here. I'm guessing New England maybe looked at him, but didn't look at him that hard.
Well, I would think, though, if I'm Andy Dalton, I would want to be a backup instead of the Jags, because that's just going to ruin your career. I mean, they don't have any wide receivers. They don't really, their coaching staff's going to be out by next year. It doesn't seem like I wouldn't want that job. I know you would always want to play.
I just want to play. I don't want to sit. And maybe this helps Andy Dalton. I don't know how. Unless, you know, he gets into some game. If he gets into some games, then Dak has been hurt. You know, he's a guy who doesn't do well in the playoffs. He's a good regular season quarterback. Yeah, Paul.
Maybe the question is, and this is a little tongue in cheek, whose career is in better shape right now, Cam Newton's or Andy Dalton's?
Well,
going forward,
Cam wants to start.
Right. He may be unemployed in August.
Yes.
By choice and not by choice.
Well, he may say, look, I'm not going unless I can start. And a team's going to go, well, we're not bringing you in unless you want to be a backup. I think Cam's just going to wait for somebody to get injured, and then he'll be there for you. But Andy Dalton seems like in a better landing spot right now because he knows what his role is. Cam doesn't know what his role is. Like, he wants to be a starter. Nobody can tell. You know, they're not able to get in person with him to find out if he's healthy or not. Yeah, Paul.
Cam Newton feels like an NFL superstar who hasn't been a superstar in the field for about 5 years. His last Pro Bowl season was 2015. He was all pro. I think he was league MVP that year.
And Super Bowl.
And he hasn't made a Pro Bowl since.
Yeah, he's in a bad situation, certainly with what's going on, you know, in the world of trying to get in front of people and prove that he's healthy. Like, he has more to prove, it feels like, than Tua does. You know, Tua, at least we had medicals there. You know, you had some records. With Cam, people don't know. Yeah, McLovin.
I think Andrew Luck is a warning story for Cam, too. Like, I think people are worried that could happen to him, where it just gets too much, the injuries.
Well, it doesn't seem like that. And they're the same age, aren't they?
Yeah, but Luck tried to come back the year before. He tried hard to come back, and it just fell out. The wheels kept falling off, right? I mean, they're same age. Aren't they kind of similar in build and sort of style a little bit?
What if Cam just takes a year off? What if he does what Rob Gronkowski did? Then you find out sort of what's going on. He's still young enough that if he's healthy, I mean, Cam is fascinating. But you got to have the right coach and the right team there if you're going to bring him in. The fact that Ron Rivera has not brought in Cam Newton, he brought in Kyle Allen, who was Cam Newton's backup, who then got some run there. That kind of tells you a little bit about where the Redskins are and where Cam Newton is, that his former coach is not bringing him in to Washington. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. We'll settle on a poll question, best and worst of the weekend, what you saw that you liked, you didn't like. Coming up next, after six episodes, what have we learned about The Last Dance? We'll talk to the director, Jason Hare. A few things came out last night, had to do with Michael's gambling, the Dream Team with Isaiah Thomas, picking Nike over Adidas. He wanted Adidas. He ended up with Nike. His mom forced him to take a trip to Oregon to go to the Nike headquarters. Got on that plane, and all of a sudden, that changed basketball forever. Sports marketing forever. 20 after the hour, the director of The Last Dance joins us next here on The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Dan Patrick Show brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Be prepared for whatever comes your way. The all-new GT four-door coupe, because life is a race. Visit your local dealership for a test drive today. If you missed any of our celebrity interviews from the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, go to the Dan Patrick Show app. Watch and listen from inside the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave. Mercedes-AMG driving performance. Play of the day, a couple of stats of the day as well. And we'll get to your phone calls as well. Best and worst of the weekend, what you saw that you liked, you didn't like. Episodes 5 and 6 aired last night. The Last Dance, ESPN's documentary on the Chicago Bulls. Jason Hare has done a great job as the director. 7 and 8 will air next Sunday, May 10th, starting at 9 Eastern. Jason, let me start with the music, the choice of music that you have in trying to match the period there. Give me the detail that went into that.
It's the most important aspect of it to me. Anytime we do a project, the first thing I start with is the music. And
You know, I walk around my neighborhood in New York and listen to songs that we may use, that we may not use, but something that gets me in the mood of what that music or what the doc is going to sound like, how the story is going to feel. And the texture of the entire documentary is the music. This was a really great opportunity because this doc is based in 80s and 90s nostalgia. And my greatest musical love is old school hip hop. So I could not wait to sink my teeth into matching up songs to each era that we're covering in each episode. So it was a field day. We had an incredible team of music clearance people. Old school hip hop is the hardest thing to clear because there's so many samples and so many of them went unchecked back in the day. Like no one was keeping track of those before sampling laws came into effect. But Rudy Chung and the guys that hit the ground running did an incredible job with this. So I was lucky to have them.
What kind of music fan is Jordan or was Jordan back then?
I think he's more R&B. I don't think that he's the kind of guy who would listen to I'm Bad, LL Cool J before a game. He famously said that he listens to Giving You the Best That I've Got, Anita Baker, before games. And it just wouldn't. it's just another incredible thing about him, big or small, but it wouldn't have fit the tone that I was trying to match in the doc. So we decided to go with our own taste rather than Michael's.
When you have the Barack Obama comment, you have the political topic where, you know, Mike says, you know, Republicans buy Nikes as well. Then you have President Obama, his comment on being disappointed in Mike. Did Jordan know what Obama was going to say in the documentary?
He didn't know what President Obama was going to say, but he saw that episode. I mean, I was surprised. This goes back to, you know, people saying that Michael has creative control. Yep. or he could have taken out anything that we did. He had the power to do so, and he never wielded that power. That soundbite that's in there where the guy compares him to Muhammad Ali and says Michael will never be like Ali. Not only did Michael want to keep that in, he wanted to answer to that because he saw a rough cut of episode 5 before we did that interview when he's in the black shirt. The black shirt interview is from December of last year. So that's why you see him speaking on that in the blue shirt, which was 2 years ago. And then he saw the cut and said, I leave it in. And I want to speak to that as well. The Ali stuff. So it was interactive with him throughout.
He doesn't apologize for anything.
No, he doesn't. And you know, I was talking with my girlfriend last night watching this. It's a refreshing. I think it's part of the refreshing part of this doc is that no one seems to. Horace Grant says, no, I was not the guy who leaked that stuff to Sam Smith. Isaiah says that's the way that people did it back then. They walked off. Michael says, if you want someone to stand behind a podium and further your agenda, you're probably following the wrong guy. Follow somebody else. I love the fact that these guys stand by what they did decades ago. They're not being indignant. They just believe in what they say.
Jordan didn't take out anything?
I'm sorry?
Jordan didn't take out anything?
Oh, he did not. No. And when you see the episodes next week, you'll be surprised. Maybe he skipped episode 7. I'm not sure, but I can't believe that he didn't.
Wait, well, what did he... you have the Steve Kerr fight, but mm-hmm. what is Tasty that he should have maybe had edited.
Well, the Steve Kerr fight is only a story that's told, and he was eager to tell that, and Steve was too. But the footage, this treasure trove of footage that we have from the NBA, what we tackle in episode 7 and 8 next week is what it was like to play with Michael and then what it was like to play against him in 7 and 8 respectively. And the with Michael stuff, man, I don't know if you would want to practice with Michael Jordan. It'd be fun to watch. I don't know if it'd be fun to interact with him during that because he is hard. He wanted to make those practices harder than any game could possibly be. And in the East back in the 90s, that meant making it as rough and as mentally grueling as possible. And there's things in there. There's language in there that I'm shocked that ESPN let us keep in. And there's behavior in there that I'm shocked that Michael let us keep in. But we were lucky enough that we had great partners in both.
I remember when I would be at the NBA Finals and have a chance to talk to Judd Bushler or Steve Kerr. And they would always talk about, you know, how intense. They always said, you're seeing it from the outside. We see it from the inside. It's not as enjoyable on the inside. On the outside, it looks like you're playing with Jordan and we're winning championships. It was really tough. And if you got the look, they always talked about you never wanted the look from Jordan. Because if you got the look, you weren't getting the ball. Like that intensity that they had every single practice. You know, that it goes back to when Mike decided to take a couple of years off. I think Mike got so into this and had to be so much to so many things and so many people, I don't know if he could have continued to do what he was doing. And I think he actually needed a break. We see coaches do this. You have burnout. I think Mike had burnout. After watching all of this, Jace, I think he had burnout. Did he address that?
He did, and we address it more because he leaves for baseball, and you'll see all his baseball experiences covered in episode 7, and episode 8 is his comeback from baseball. It absolutely was burnout, and he wanted to do this as recently as 92 from 93, but as far back, if you look at, there's a Roy Firestone interview from 1984 on Up Close on ESPN, and Michael says to Firestone when he's about to leave UNC for the draft, he says that he's going to leave pro basketball at 30 and become a golfer. He always had this in his mind that he was going to do this, dominate for a while, and then leave and go do something else. It's just how his mind works. I'm sure he's sitting at home in quarantine right now wondering what else he can beat once this thing gets lifted and he can go out and interact with the rest of the world. So he was absolutely burnt out, and then it was greatly compounded by the death of his dad. He was grieving, and he needed a reset.
Yeah.
So we address some of the reasons that people say he left this suspension conspiracy theory. We address all of that with David Stern, with Michael and others, but the guy was burnt out. He was done. He was done physically. He was done mentally. He was done spiritually, and he needed to go somewhere else.
He's Jason Hare. He's the director of ESPN's The Last Dance. You got episodes 5 and 6 that aired last night. 7 and 8 will air next Sunday, May 10th, starting at 9 Eastern. What was the toughest question you asked him throughout all of this?
It was hard to discuss his dad because, one of our goals in this thing was to present these guys as human beings, not as icons, not as statues, but as human beings. And when you're talking to someone about losing their parent, no matter what the circumstances, it's a tough thing to bring up. And when you're talking to someone about their father being murdered, it's extremely tough to bring up. And then you have to ask the question of how do you respond to these rumors that you were somehow responsible for his death? It's just kind of it's a stew of difficult topics to bring up all in one subject and all in one time period. So I gave him a heads up before the interview that this is going to be one of the ones where we go deep on that kind of stuff and just prepare for that. And I told him from the outset that there's going to be difficult questions that I ask you. You can choose to answer them however you please. I have to ask them. And he respected that.
Did you ever get the look from him? Like he was disappointed in you? Mad?
I don't think so. I mean, I got the look like that's a dumb question, or I got the look like he's, I don't know if you can say this on your air, but he's a ball buster, definitely. And part of that is fun. You know that. You've dealt with him a lot more than I have. You know, the final interview that we did, we finished the interview and I said, is there anything else that you want to add to this? And he made some sort of joke like, no, I think we have it covered in 8 hours of talking. And then I said, all right, 10 seconds of room tone. And we have to do that for editing purposes. So everyone in the room has to be quiet and we just have to record the sound of the room quietly for 10 seconds. And I said, all right, 10 seconds, go. And I have to count to 10 in my head and then I call it and the interview is wrapped. So I called, all right, room tone, 10 seconds. I was quiet, counted to 10 and said, all right, thanks, we're done. He said, that was 13.
Who said no to an interview?
There were some. My standard answer so far has been that we got every person we wanted to tell a story from, all the stories we wanted to tell, we got the right person to tell the story. There were people who said, no, I'd rather not share that.
Who was reluctant?
Stockton was reluctant because, I finally got him on the phone. We interviewed John Stockton on March 10th.
This March 10th.
Yeah. So that was Tuesday, March 10th. We interviewed him in Spokane. It was so deep into this COVID crisis that we decided I shouldn't fly to Spokane because we were afraid that flights would get grounded indefinitely. So we had someone out there, a stringer from Seattle, drove in and did that interview. He was reluctant because I finally got him on the phone after like 2 years of chasing him in January or February. And he said, I don't want to be part of a Michael Jordan puff piece. And I said, I can assure you that this is not a puff piece. And I explained to him who else was participating and that he was the 106th interview in the process and what we were covering. And then guys like BJ Armstrong were reluctant out of deference to Michael because they're protecting Michael and they wanted to know, you know, who these people are who are telling this story. Is Michael cool with it? There were plenty of people who, you know, it's not easy to get people to sit down and talk about Michael because he casts such a large shadow over people's lives still. So they want to know all sorts of details about, all right, who is this telling the story? What have they done before? What kind of story is this going to be? So we had a lot of reluctance, but very few. I mean, we had 106 interviews and we cast a really wide net and maybe two or three people said they'd rather not be a part of it.
But the fact that Stockton says, I don't want to be part of a puff piece. How did you react to that? Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I've never heard John Stockton's voice. I've never heard it. He's so reticent. I mean, he could have sounded like Scottie Pippen. He could have sounded like my mom. Like, I had no idea what he was going to sound like. But I respected him more for saying, no, it's not that I don't want to do it. It's just that I don't feel like gushing about Michael Jordan for a half hour and you guys putting it. He's still – it still stings, those losses.
Oh, Reggie Miller was on a couple of weeks ago, Jace. I mean,
Reggie's
painful.
Another guy. Reggie's another guy, man. And we tried and tried and tried it. And we were getting official no's from Reggie. And Gail DeGassino, who's his manager, I had to reach out to her personally and assure her like we were doing this the right way. We were getting no's from him. And then I was listening to him call games. And he was saying, you know, I haven't gotten the call yet. I'm hoping to be a part of this thing. And I was like, Reggie, we're dying for you to be a part of this. But it still stings with these guys. Larry Bird is legendarily, Larry Legend, no pun intended, legendarily reluctant to speak about anything. He just doesn't like doing these interviews. But it's like I said before that when Michael calls, people pick up on the first ring. So Magic said, I don't know if this happened, but Magic told me that when he did it, he called Larry and said, you have to do it because I did it. It's this incredible, you know, Mount Rushmore of guys who have this kind of pact that they all are going to tell each other stories. It's really cool to observe.
What was your reaction when the, you know, Ken Burns, who does documentaries for a living, said that this really wasn't a documentary, The Last Dance? How'd you react to that?
Ken Burns is one of my idols. He's got an extraordinary body of work, and he's one of the reasons why I wanted to do what I do now. So, I was a little disappointed that he hadn't seen it yet, and he seemed to be casting judgment. But he called me the other day and couldn't have been more gracious and couldn't have been more classy and said that he apologized not for what he said, but for the fact that it was taken out of context and that he deals in a PBS world where anyone who has a remote connection to the subject is automatically forbidden to be a part of the process. And so for Michael to be a partner in this and for him to be watching Rough Cuts, he said that that's just something that would not happen in my world. So it was really, you know, it was incredible to actually get a phone call from that guy because I've looked up to him forever. Also, I would say that I'm not, you know, what we do is journalistic, but I wouldn't call myself a journalist. I am in the business of storytelling and we use a visual medium to tell these stories. And when someone like Michael Jordan grants you the access and the permission to tell his story, you'd be a fool not to take it. And I'm proud to say, and Michael should be proud to say, that there was never one frame of this documentary that he exercised any censorship over. So Ken is in his business. He does a great job at it. He's a legend. He's in any kind of filmmaking hall of fame that you could think of. And I'm trying to do my job as well.
We have 10 episodes. Can you see maybe an 11th episode there, Jason? Like leftovers.
There's a lot of leftovers. There were 500 hours of footage that season, and we stopped telling our story in 1998.
What if ESPN said, give us an 11th just leftovers, outtakes?
I would have to take a nap and decide after I got a good sleep.
Are you done with 9 and 10? Are they?
We're not.
They're not.
We're not.
You done with 7 and 8?
Yes, 7 and 8 are done. Nine is done. 7, 8, and 9 are done. 10, I'm waiting. I'm pacing outside the delivery room right now. They're supposed to give episode 10 the final audio mix and the final color correction any day now. I watch that. I give my notes. They incorporate my notes. I watch it a final time, and then that's that. So I think if we talk again, I think that when we talk again, it'll be done. I'll a plume of white smoke will come out of a high rise in Tribeca. You'll see.
We'll have our next Pope. I think there's going to be, it feels like there's going to be an 11th episode. Am I crazy in saying that? Has that been discussed?
It has not been discussed.
Okay. I just came up with it. We discussed it. So you can say it's in discussion. You've had discussions. We had a discussion here, Jason.
It's been discussed that there will be an 11th episode, and not with any of the partners who would greenlight it.
And I love seeing Kobe. You know, you don't realize how impactful those words are until, obviously, with what happened. But I thought it was just such a mature way to approach this Jordan legacy of, I'm not there with him. He's the reason why I am where I am. It hit hard.
For me, it hit hard. I haven't seen these episodes in a long time because we signed off on these pre-COVID and it's been such a race to the finish line. After he passed away, it was always striking in the edit room to see him come up. I will never wrap my head around it. I don't think any of us will. It doesn't make sense that someone who seemed that vibrant and vital and immortal, frankly, could be gone. So it's not the most articulate way to say it, man, but it is so sad to watch that last night. Was so sad. It's so poignant because of Michael's speech too, at the memorial. You know that from both sides, that's confirmed. This is not just athlete BS and he's my big brother. He really felt that way about him. And Michael really felt that way about Kobe. It was such a special relationship. There's such kindred spirits. And to say it hit home is an understatement.
Go take a nap, Jason.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, well done so far. And we'll look forward to that 11th episode. You heard it here first on the Dan Patrick Show. Thank you, Jace.
All right, man.
That's Jason Hare. He's the director of ESPN's The Last Dance. He needs a nap. He went to bed at 3 in the morning and got up just to do this. So I appreciate that. But man, the leftovers, the outtakes, I'm all in. Back with the play of the day and your phone calls after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. All right, we'll get some phone calls coming up. Paulie and I were just discussing if you had an 11th episode, I would have the director there. Michael Thompson's brother, Andy Thompson, is as valuable as anybody on this documentary because he worked for NBA Entertainment and struck up a friendship with Michael. He was part of the film crew. And if you had just the people behind the scenes talking about the making of this, outtakes that you had, awkward moments, things that weren't aired, I think you could do something sort of wrapping it up and having fun and giving those people behind the scenes who were instrumental in making this happen. Because Michael and Adam Silver had this agreement for over 20 years. They had all this footage and then they had to agree to this. They finally did. And then they produced this. And there's still some stuff, though. I think Michael was burnt out and I was around him in the Arizona League when Terry Francona was his manager, when he was out there playing baseball, winter baseball in Arizona. And I went out there with Charles Barkley. And you could see where Michael looked like he was refreshed. Like this was, he was doing something that was so different and there weren't the pressures on him that, and a lot of this pressure was self-applied. But it felt like he was able to breathe. And Charles even remarked, and I have a picture that was taken where I'm sitting with Jordan and Barkley and he's in the dugout. And Michael just, I think he wanted to exhale. And whether it had something to do with, was he involved in gambling? Was he suspended? That's always been out there. It's always going to be out there. It's like the flu game. I had people in Park City, Utah, swore to me that they were there the night that Michael was staying in Park City the night before the flu game and that he was up all night, drinking and playing cards. The three guys who worked at a bar in Park City told me that last year when I was out there. Swore. Now, is it true? Who knows? There's always going to be, there's that myth quality to Michael now. And you had, didn't have social media. I mean, imagine if he did all of these things, any of these things now. Like LeBron gets ripped, for being LeBron. Michael, we tend to look at, hey, he punched Steve Kerr. Man, I love that aggressive attitude in practice. You know, that everybody should practice that way. Every day is the Super Bowl to him. Like, you know, we sort of go, hey, Michael didn't have a gambling problem. He had a competitive problem. Oh, okay. So Pete Rose had a gambling problem. Pete, you know, Michael had a competitive problem. Like, we pick and choose when it comes to this. It's fascinating. And to, you know, kind of go behind the scenes there where people, a new generation is seeing what competition is all about. And I love the fact that the last time Kobe played against Michael, Michael was 40 and he was in a Wizards uniform. Kobe put up 55 on him. I love that. Hey, I don't care how old you are, Mike. I'm putting it on you. I think Kobe had 42 in the first half. I love that. And when he popped up on the screen, man, oh, it's just a direct shot to the heart. It's like, oh, man. And he said, he was so wise in what he said about Michael. Hey, this isn't about me trying to be Michael. I mean, he's my hero. That I am who I am because of him. I just thought he was so wise there. We'll check in with the Dallas Cowboys coming up next here on the Dan Patrick Show.